Off the Ball Rugby.
I had him in my original, if you remember, Colin. I had him as my starting 10 for the tour.
Yeah, but you were also in a stadium and that's changed. So, like, what do you think now?
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Hey lads, Barney Rock, Dean Rock, how are we?
Great, Tommy.
Very well, Tommy, yeah, all good.
Where are we?
We're in North County Dublin, a little village called Ballymadon, close to Garristown. So it's where my mother's from, and it's where the family were reared. Married a girl from Kathleen from Garristown, and we just built a house here back in the early 80s.
Childhood, growing up with that Meath and Dublin rivalry and coming back from Croke Park through Ashburn Village, maybe stopping at Chipper on the way home and seeing all the Meath supporters in the Meath jerseys and a couple of Dubs in Dublin jerseys. But yeah, it was a nice childhood growing up. It was a nice healthy rivalry.
It's out in the country, Barney.
Yeah, it is out in the country. Nice fresh air.
Yeah, you know? You would have spent your summers out here.
Yeah, I did. I was lucky enough, my mother, I have one of 11, the middle and of the whole office, and my mother would have sent me out here in the summer to work on the uncle's farm. I loved it out here. Then we got married, got a site, and yeah, Everything is just history, but that's 1982.
Yeah, two daughters living either side of you, and Dean, your own family, yourself and Niamh, have another little one on the way, so congrats with that.
Yeah, thanks. We decided to stay a little bit away from the family side. We're in Portmarnock there in Dublin, obviously. So it's great. But look, the girls are delighted to have the house next. I'm sure mum and dad are delighted to have them beside them as well, and all the grandkids around the place. So it's nice.
Will you talk to us about the Rocks on Russell Road?
My grandfather was the man with the bowler hat that used to carry the ball out. It was tradition back then. He would have carried the ball out to the referee, who then gave it to the archbishop then to throw in. So he was the main person there. He had the keys of Croke Park. His own sons then, one was doing the scoreboards, one at each end. My father did the styles, and Joe would have done the dressing room. For years, he was working there nearly 80 years in total. So he was brought up in it. So I suppose from that point of view, we were always connected through my father's side. I would remember it going down to back around 1973, going down to the All-Ireland finals. But the grandmother would have had bacon and cabbage, and the bacon and cabbage would have been at 10 o'clock in the morning, because they'd have to have it done. They'd have to have the bowler hat done. The grandfather would have a suit on, the home tie, the whole lot, really neat. And would have had to be down Croke Park, say, for 11 o'clock. So we were living in the Finglas area, and Johnstown Park was the nearest pitch we had. And up there, you had maybe four soccer pitches, Tulka Rovers and Griffa Rovers. And then you'd only won two Gaelic pitches.
I know you mentioned the connection with the rocks and all that history that was there. But for you growing up, I know you had a lot of brothers. There was a big soccer influence. Was it a big thing to wear the Dublin jersey? Because it isn't as it is now. Like, it hadn't caught fire maybe in the sense that it has in the capital over the last 20 odd years.
The Dubs of 74, they resurrected everything. And once they won the All-Ireland, came out of nowhere in 74 to win it. And then all of a sudden they got to six finals in a row. It captured the whole Dublin scene, and everybody wanted to beat Dublin back then, whereas before 74, Dublin, nobody feared Dublin at all.
1974, when the Dubs, you know, won the All-Ireland, back in that day, you know, Dublin hadn't been doing anything in the inter-county scene. It was nearly, lads didn't want to say they were actually playing for Dublin. All of a sudden, Dublin win the All-Ireland and Hill 16 has fallen. The Dubs has given it a high profile.
Along came them great players, Brian Mullins, Jimmy Keaveney, Joe, Sean Doherty, Paddy Cullen, all those fellas who really made it. And when you were only 13, 14, it just gave you a desire to want to go and play.
In 1978, 79, myself and Barney Rock were on the minor team for 2 years. Barney obviously had unbelievable talent, you know, as a young lad. Because we were playing adult level at 16, 17 years of age, when the two of us came in, the two of us had the same goal, to play for Dublin. We were beaten in the minor final in 78, and we were lucky enough to be still eligible to play the following year. Myself and Barney were introduced into the Dublin panel in 79 National League. You know, from there on then, we were in and out of the team together, and that led on to kind of 1983 when we eventually won in All-Ireland.
What was life like as a Dublin footballer in the 80s, Barney?
I suppose it was ideal, it was grand for us. You know, we didn't have as many matches, you know, as you were saying, going to Croke Park. We would just drive our car. We would probably park outside Russell Avenue. You could get through the crowds at that stage, and you would just be walking down with the crowd. So you were part of it, you know. And Dublin didn't have as many matches. It wasn't as high profile, even though it was playing for Dublin was very profile as such. But back then, you know, we probably, when you're beaten in the championship, you're gone. There was no back door, there was no extra games, you know. And I suppose it's, when you think of it, back then when you're looking at footage of matches, the only footage you would have got is maybe the highlights of the Leinster final, an All-Ireland semi-final and a final. Whereas nowadays, every match is nearly on TV.
Barney was always the go-to man to get the scores. Barney was always brought out from full forward to play into midfield, and that's how good he was. They were bringing him out to midfield to bail us out at times. He was the ace in the team. Get the ball into him, Barney will score. Somewhere, somehow, he always ended up in the edge of the square and would stick the ball in the back of the net. Certainly the best I played with as regards a Dublin forward.
Croker, for you, Dean, like, what does it mean to you? Because your dad is talking about the connections that he was close to. What was your first experience of?
Jeez, it was an incredible childhood for your summer to be going into Croke Park. And it wasn't every game, but for any game I wanted to go in, or any game that Dad was working at, you know, I was in the dressing rooms in Croke Park or on the side of the pitch. So I was exposed to it from a very age. So it was very clear for me that's from an early age, that's what I wanted to do.
Really?
I wanted to, yeah, get out and play with Dublin someday.
I suppose for the Rock family in particular, there's such an element of history around Croke Park and all that it brings, with my dad's obviously grandfather and his cousin now and his uncle and whatever else. So there's such a big history. Croke Park was just like probably our second back garden. The biggest memory that I have from when I was really, really small was when I was walking to and from Croke Park, and Dad would have been playing matches for Dublin at the time. And it was that element of people stopping, wanting to talk to him, or even just saying Barney, his name. There was always an element growing up of that Dad was someone to other people. He wasn't just like, he was Dad to me and he always will be, but he meant something to so many other people.
Walking alongside Dad down to Croke Park, just everybody talking to him, or little things like, geez, is he going to play with Dublin? Is he going to be like you, type thing? I was very aware of it from a young age, from 7 or 8. It gave me a focus, really.
There was that amazing photo, I think it was in the Herald that printed it, of the two ye striking a free, and it's the kind of split down the middle, and the arc, the arms, the strike, the similarities, like...
Yeah.
Well, mine went over the bar. I don't know where Dean went.
Yeah.
Did it just happen like that, or did you copy him? Did you watch a little tape of him, or what?
I definitely tried to copy him as a kid. Dad only stopped playing when he was 43, maybe, yeah, for Garrison. Yeah. So I got a good couple of years going down to the pitch to watch him practice or in matches. So I would have always tried to practice his stutter or whatever before the kicks.
He absolutely looked up to Dad. You could see it. Although we laugh, like, there's videos of Dean and he's emulating Jason Sherlock in the back garden or whatever, trying to kick balls. That would have been his time and stuff like that. He absolutely loved her. He thrives on the fact that, you know, he was a free taker for Dublin. Dad was a free taker for Dublin. And it's such a special, unique aspect that he did follow in the footsteps of his father. Dad and Dean absolutely have a lot of shared personality traits, characteristics. They would be very driven, quietly, quiet strength, quiet self-belief in themselves, you know, that they can achieve and will achieve what they set out to achieve. Definitely is something within them that is very similar. They have the same inner belief, inner, you know, strengths, I suppose, that has been able to see them go from playing football in a garden to obviously achieving such great things in both their playing and football career.
Dean was as good as Barney as a finisher. When you look at the record he has, he's the top scorer now of all time at the Dubs. Barney, I think, is fourth.
It's aren't linear, and Dean, like, yours certainly isn't. It's like there's a couple of acts there along the way in your Dublin career. I know you get your decade, really, Barney, and you're in and out, and it's 10 years. Like, Dean, you're there for the start of the Earwigs game in 09.
Like, my career probably just took off when I went to college in 2008. Got exposed to really good training with DCU. I kind of blew up kind of size-wise and different things. And from there, because I wasn't like an underage prodigy or anything like that. It was just a case of I was efficient and I was diligent and I was able to contribute to the team. But I started to kind of grow as a footballer when I went to DCU and got exposed to, you know, gym two or three times a week, early morning running sessions. We had Paul Grimley from Armagh was our freshers coach with Declan Brennan, and they really instilled the sort of forwards working hard and tackling and different things. That's what I needed in my game at that time. Then we won the freshers All-Ireland, and then I got called up to Dublin under-21s. So I was only 18 at the time. That went really well, and then I was just parachuted straight into the senior team.
So you're what? What are you in 09? Are you 18, 19?
That summer, I'm 19.
But you don't start your first Dublin game until 2015 in the league.
Like, I remember the time I did get a call in 2012 to say that I was dropped. And look, it's fine. Like, it happened. This is just my own little story. Things that happened to me. I learned a huge amount from it. But I got a call. We'd after playing club championship the week before. I think I'd scored 15 points. Gone really well. Won the Sigerson. Got on the team of the year there. I was thinking I was going to have a really good summer in 2012. And then I just got a call just to say, just weren't in the plans for the summer. And that was really hard. You were coming to a stage where you were playing really well with the under-21s. You were winning All-Ireland. And at that stage, the natural progression was to go and play at the senior team. That's all I wanted to do, as I said, to play as a kid, represent the senior team at Croke Park and Hill 16, all that kind of stuff. And yeah, I think it was just a case that I probably wasn't ready.
From the outside looking in, there was a bit of pressure on Dean because Barney Rock's son was the free taker, has ability, but just, you know, falls short or whatever. So I think there was an element of that. And it was kind of, I think he felt that he let the family down to some extent, which he absolutely didn't. Like, and his sister looking on, like someone that you love so much and seeing the commitment that he's had, you know, and the sacrifices that he would have made, like in youth and stuff like that. It was a tough one for him.
Of course it was tough. Sure. Like I said, everyone has their own story, but do you know what I mean? My mum would have been worrying about it. Geez, is he ever going to make it? And do you know what I mean? I would have been aware of those things. You can hear things through the doors in a small house. Or, do you know what I mean? Like, it's not. But like, I went to bed with those things. But do you know what I mean? Because your parents just want you, obviously, to realise your dream. And that was my dream. I kind of set sights on it. And then when you keep getting knocked back, it's kind of you know, you have to show massive resilience, and that's probably what I'm proud of most, really, is just that resilience piece and not giving up on it. But then I had a good support network, like, so different things like that kind of helped me along the way. And it was tough. it was challenging. Now I probably feared that it might never happen for me, but I probably never doubted myself. That was the big thing.
I'm not going to sit here and lie and say it was an easy kind of month or so afterwards or whatever. It wasn't, you know, you have to be honest about it. It took time. And probably what hurt the most was when he was watching on the television and, you know, not being there, or us as a family, like, going and he's not part of the fabric, you know, of that Dublin team and stuff like that at that time was probably hard. And we probably felt like any sibling would or a parent would, that he's well able.
I always had great faith in Dean, you know, because I seen him as he was coming up and I, you know, believed. But certainly, the following day, all of a sudden, he said, "Where are you going?" He said, "I'm going down the football field." So that was just the nature of it. You just get back on the horse.
It sounds like to me that it's one of the factors that drove you to another level.
Yeah, no, it definitely did. Because I probably felt that I deserved to be down there, but for whatever reason, just wasn't to be. And I mean, the very next day, I just went down to the local pitch and just kind of went training away. And
sounds like a bit of a marathon, was it?
Yeah, it's my only way to kind of deal with it was just to get back on the horse and to go again.
What didn't Dean do? I suppose he got the call. He could have laid down and said, "Oh, enough is enough. I'm done with football." But he didn't. He showed such resilience, such perseverance. Mam will always relay the story of he would be getting balls into a net bag and he'd be heading off and he'd grab the bike and Mam would be like, "Where are you off to?" He goes, "I'm going into the pitch. I'm going in to kick a few frees and whatever." So it was just that he knew himself that he was capable of way more, and he knew he was, you know, a piece of that Dublin framework that was going to go on. And I think that self-drive and that belief, he was already had been in the camp, understood what was expected perhaps of him, and so he knew he had it.
I kind of made a pact to myself that day that I gave myself a bigger goal than it was even I thought would be possible. I said I was going to become Dublin's highest scorer, and yeah, I just wrote down a piece of paper and the rest is kind of history, I suppose.
We discovered a letter that he wrote, a note, probably a little self-note to himself, of all that he was going to achieve. And that was all following from that phone call, that disappointing phone call that he got in 2012. And the fact that he wrote that note to himself, what he wanted to achieve, you know, is testament to him and his drive and his inner belief. Which, you know, yeah, I'm so proud of that. I'm so proud of him.
On a piece of paper, you're going to become Dublin's highest scorer of all time. And it's 2020 when that happens. And, like, the list is pretty special that you're now on top of. Your father, I think you're number four, Barney, are you? Berner's there, Jimmy Keaveney's there. You're number one. Like, that's... that must have been something special when that happened.
It was probably 8 or 9 years since when I did write it down, and then obviously going to realise it was something. It was a personal thing. It's probably silly in many ways, but for me it was something just kept me going through the hard times when, you know what I mean, you're 21, 22 and you decide you ever want, it's not there for you, and you're trying to just, you know what I mean. So there's a huge amount of lessons in that for me, I think. Just I still am very thankful for that experience, because I don't think I would have been the player I was or would have achieved that if I didn't go through all those hard things, to be quite honest with you. Because I wasn't the complete player at that time. I had so much to add to my game. And yeah, everything happens for a reason. But there was a fine moment when I could have went the other way. But I'm very thankful that I didn't.
And once you do, there's like this incredible influence and like a consecutive run of 60-odd games where you start every league and championship game. I think of all the records that you've broken, I think one of the ones that stands out is the amount you've contributed in All-Ireland finals. I think maybe Mikey Sheehy might have a score more than you, but it's actually delivering in those big days. That day in 17, or that moment, like that's what you're training for. Like they're these moments, and you would have done the same thing. Like you want that moment, right? There's an element of, and I've heard you mention before, You acknowledged it. This is to win the All-Ireland here.
Yeah, look, I put a huge amount of practice into my free take, and that was my point of difference. That was my thing that helped me get into the team. That was something that I kind of really went after from a very young age.
2017 was really the pinnacle for Dean as an individual and all that he had worked to achieve. To see Dean run out onto the pitch, you do get that sense of butterflies in your stomach. You want him to do well, you want the team to do well. But overall, overriding aspect of it is just pure pride. When you see all that he'd done to get to that level, all the hard work, the graft, the commitment, the determination. I was quite superstitious. I'd never watched Dean kick the ball. I would watch the posts. I'd be watching the black spot on the posts and kind of listening out to the crowd and seeing, is this going to go over the bar? I would always believe that it would go over the bar, but you just never know.
I'm sure all kinds of emotions are running through Dean Rock's head.
As a kid growing up, I probably always would have pictured myself kicking a free to win an All-Ireland. Most other kids, maybe, is getting a goal.
Taking his 31st championship match, 27 years of age. His dad, Barney, did it many times in the past.
For me, it was always a free in the last kick of the game to win the All-Ireland.
This has to be the kick that goes over the bar if Dublin are to win the All-Ireland.
It was just one of those moments where, will I watch, will I not watch?
Heartbreak for Mayo, 116 to 116, 6 minutes into stop.
I was kind of put pride in myself and being able to execute under pressure. That was kind of it all coming together.
Rock kicking up into the air and over the bar. And Dublin have surely won the All-Ireland.
Those balls that he put in the bag, going down to the local pitch, kick and practicing his free kicks, all stemmed and moved towards that one moment in his career, and to see the ball fly over the bar was just extra special. It's something that me and our family, our sisters, our mom and dad would just all hold so special.
How many times do you think you played that moment growing up? You did your 10,000 hours with your All-Ireland winning free,
yeah,
I'd say.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, just that alone.
Yeah. The Dublin story of the five in a row, six in a row, the era, like, there must be unbelievable satisfaction in what ye.
Yeah, when you retire, geez, you look back and say, like, it was an incredible six years. To do six in a row is amazing. Six sometimes gets forgotten about. It seems like five in a row because there was so much put into that to create a bit of history. But to be the first men's team to do anything in that regard is is massively satisfying. I think at the time, there was a lot of, you know, talk about, you know, the different things, funding and stuff like that. But that does get the players. But still, I think you're starting to see now that we were just so fortunate that it was just two generations of players coming together at the one time. And, like, we were so fortunate and lucky in a lot of them big games. Like, they, you know, some of them were at replays. Some of them we won by points after replays. Like, there was so little between us and Mayo and Kerry in a lot of those big games. So, yeah, to get over the line in those games and obviously to win the amount of All-Irelands we did in that period of time it's unbelievable. Like, it's, you know, you just never let yourself think of it like that when you were playing, because you couldn't, because you just lose your bit of an edge, you know?
Yeah, you'd feel like you were maybe doing a disservice to what you were, maybe the group or the journey, if you were to, like, you were so... The group was so sacrosanct to you, right? Like, what you were doing. Nothing got out.
Maybe after the three in a row, it was all kind of eyes towards the five in a row then, and creating a bit of history that had never been done. Do you know what I mean? I think after before the three in a row, you're not really thinking of it too far, because it's too far away. Yeah. Whereas then you're just thinking, right, if we get over the four in a row, then maybe this is what this team is destined to achieve.
Bernie, let's talk about your favourite day in a Dublin jersey. What would it have been?
Well, I would have to say go back to 1983. People might say the All-Ireland final, but I would say Having got the equaliser in Croke Park, the favourite day of the whole lot was actually the trip to Cork the following weekend.
So this is the All-Ireland semi-final?
The All-Ireland semi-final replay.
Cork should have beaten us in the draw match. 1-2 in the last 5 minutes, whatever it was. Looked like we were beaten.
Brian Mullins, out to the wing.
Barney got the last minute goal. All of a sudden, we're going down to Parky Cave on a Saturday. We were never on an overnight with Dublin in our, you know, in our short careers. You played in Leinster Championship in Kildare, you know, Offaly, whatever. So there was no overnighters. So we thought this was a great adventure. But there was such a hype about it the week before. The GAA wouldn't televise it, you know, because they didn't want to affect other matches in the country, you know, club matches. Then the guards were talking, there'd be trouble down there because big Dublin crowd never travelled that distance before or overnight.
I remember the night beforehand, Kevin Heffron, we had a meeting and Kevin turned around and he says, right lads, he says, went through everything. He says, do what you normally do on a Saturday night. Don't go in, go to bed or sleep or anything like that. Whatever you used to do on a Saturday night. So it was a nice little place, Blarney. So we would have went down to the square. There's lots of dubs around. There was sing songs going on in the pub. So a few fellas would have been outside. And one or two lads might have had a drink.
Mm-hmm. Get up the next morning, kiss the Blarney Stone. Scorcher of a day.
You swear you were in Italy or Spain. The crowd were starting to build. And I think that gave us a big, big lift.
You know, then when you looked at the ground itself, you know, you had blue, red. You know what I mean? And two blue, I should say, one red. Dublin just took over.
Do you score a goal that there in the...
Yeah, I scored a goal. Anton O'Toole passed the ball to me.
Anton O'Toole is under it. Kevin Kelly recovering fast. Anton gets it into his possession. And across, Barney Rock is there. Yes, it must be the goal.
They're all like Calvin, kicked it inland. So there were four great goals. We ended up winning the match, I think, 4-15 to 2-11.
And the tribute to the followers. They deserve it because they came to
Cork. We're all talking about the Dubs that caused trouble, you know. There was no trouble, no nothing. Look at it, just turned out to be probably one of the best kinds of football and great memories and moved us on then to the final.
On this historic occasion, they go back to Dublin tonight, full of joy for the team in the All-Ireland final.
You mentioned it being a beautiful day in Cork that afternoon for the replay. It certainly wasn't a beautiful day for the All-Ireland final of 1983. Not that it mattered to you at the end of it. You receive a kick out and you put this lovely ball back into the top corner from about 40 yards. Two-point territory.
Well, I had read something in the week prior to it that there was a bit of a dodgy thing with the goalkeeper, Conor, that maybe he had a problem with his toe. So I decided I had an awful habit when I was playing
football.
Opposition
analysis back in the day.
This isn't on Twitter. Where did you get this from?
So with that then, I had an awful habit playing full forward at the club. And with kickouts, I'd always try and run in front of the full back and jump and maybe catch a ball or bad kickout catch and I'd kick it over the keeper's head. So I'd always done it. Seamus McHugh, who was marking, he was in front of me. But as the ball was kicked, I just sort of stepped around him and somehow the ball just came and I caught it. So it's about 50 yards out at the time, the 50-yard line.
But 90 yards.
I had moved three or four steps, and I seen the keeper out, and I decided, right, well, here it goes.
Joe McNally being attended to as the game goes on. Barney Rock catches it. It's a goal! It's a goal
for probably was the difference in the game, because it gave us a six-point lead at half-time, and we just held out then the Amber team.
Dean, what's retirement like?
That's fine, yeah. I mean, I'm enjoying it. I mean, you give so much to inter-county football in your career from the age of 18 onwards, really. So it's the guts of 15 years of long, hard commitment and discipline and everything else. So it's, I don't particularly miss it. Very thankful for all the work that I put into it and was very diligent with my time and made the most of it, really. And a lot of those, you learn a lot of experiences through your inter-county career that you carry with you then from, obviously, from work and a life perspective. So, no, I'm very much at ease now. It was certainly the right time for me to hang up the boots when I did from an inter-county perspective. Naturally enough, after you win All-Ireland, you think that, look, we'll go back again, we'll do it, we'll win it again. But I knew mentally I couldn't go through that again, and my body was a little bit sore, ankles and different things, but like, yeah, it was the right time for me, certainly.
I think when Dean hung up the boots, I would say it was the right time for Dean. When he left and retired, 100% was the right time for him. Us as a family, there could have been no better way if Dean was to hang up his boots than to win an All-Ireland final. It was so special that day. You could just sense it. You really could sense it. And just the joy that it brought us and the fact that he kind of came full circle and to win it was just so special. Absolutely, we had his back and we fully believed and supported his decision and believed that it was the right one for him.
Did you miss it when you retired?
Of course. I was younger. I was only, I was 30 when I was finished and I thought I had more. Dublin players back then, they were all finished at 34, 36. And I was sort of saying, geez, where's my last 4 years gone? So I was looking forward to those years. Everything had gone to speed up. I wasn't able to do the 100 yards in 11 seconds. So I suppose that didn't help me.
The intensity of that, when you mentioned, you know, not missing it after retirement, the intensity of it, did it take a lot out of you, that being so involved? And I'm sure there was a selfishness with that too.
Oh, yeah. Like that's, you probably have to be extremely selfish to be an inter-county footballer. And it just has to be your number one focus. Like it has to be above family, it has to be above work, it has to be above everything. For me, anyway, it had to be. Some guys are potentially different, but for me, I just had to put everything behind football. Football was number one. All my decisions were based around training that week or the weekend or the next season. Like I didn't go on certain team holidays because I wanted to be in good shape for January to hit the ground running. So that was just my decision.
From Dean's point of view, he would have had to sacrifice when all his friends and whatever else, were going out and partying and college life and stuff like that. He was just so driven that football was what he wanted to do. He wanted to put on the Dublin jersey. And with that comes sacrifice in terms of, you know, the youth side of things and what others his age would have been doing. From Dad's point of view, it's a sacrifice in a different way. Dad would have been younger having his children, and we all would have been very small. I'm the eldest of five kids. He was still playing football when Dean was born and Laura was born. So there was still very much that aspect of, you know, trying to get the right balance between playing football, working and family life.
It must have helped having a family involved in football and then also a partner and now a wife who was on her own journey with the Dubs as well. They had an unbelievable run themselves.
Niamh and them, they had a great time at the same time as ourselves. So there was a lot of, we were obviously both doing things together, you know, to get ourselves right from a performance perspective. So that certainly helped. We had to spend time together then. Otherwise, if she wasn't playing sport, it probably wouldn't have worked, to be honest, you know. Niamh and family were always huge for me. Like I got a huge amount of, I suppose, inspiration and motivation from my family and how proud they were of, say, me playing. And I probably never wanted to let that go. So that's what was always my driver for the following year. Of course, you were doing it for your own satisfaction. You were doing it for your best mates in the team. You were doing it for Dublin. But I got a huge amount out of doing it for my family. My sisters and obviously mum and dad. That was a big driver for me. I was nearly more happy seeing how happy they were after all Ireland's and myself. They went through the whole experience with me as well. So I got a huge amount from that. Yeah.
Dad and Dean have the shared passion of going out on the golf course. I've no doubt that in the years to come, that both Dad and Dean would be out on the golf course and enjoying each other's company. What a privilege it would be for them to look back, talking about all that they've achieved. It's not always about the winning. It's about the friendship that they've created through the sport and all that that brings with it.
When was the first time you remember me playing football?
Oh, I'd say about 1998, 1999, probably for Garrison. Yeah. Local game.
Eight or nine,
probably the first time I remember, yeah. I don't know if you played well or not now, but I remember.
That was the championship final.
So was it? Well, there was, yeah. 99, yeah. So what do you remember of me growing up playing?
Would have been the school final when you won that back in around the same time as we won the intermediate championship. Mm. It was the first one the school had won for a few years.
Yeah.
I thought at that stage he might catch me. But I didn't think he'd surpass me.
If I'm being honest, I would say Dad never thought he would catch up on him, to be fair. He had obviously got a good record himself, like, so he thought, oh, I don't know if my son will emulate what I've done, if not advance it.
For what Barney done, to score what he scored, 30 goals scored and fought in the pecking order, 30 goals is a fair whack of goals. To me, what Barney achieved and what he scored in our day in less matches is incredible.
Many do we have between us?
Well, we have nine, but then you've got to count
between
the,
us, yeah.
You've got to count the minor and 21.
And 21, yeah. So it's 11. Yeah. So many do you have?
Well, I have. Then I'm going to put me all out. I've got to put me over 40 all Ireland's NTO, so which I have three, and then I can go for the golf medal. So yeah. I suppose we would be about even.
Yeah.
But at the minute, you're only talking about football.
It's a draw, so.
Football is 8-1 for you.
Senior, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, not bad. You can still catch me.
For the Rock family, who were steeped in the history of Crow Park, and for two members of the family to end up winning what they won, Dean in particular, who ends up with 8 All-Ireland medals in a career that nobody will ever touch again.
Dean was Barney Rock's son. He obviously lived with that tag, but that tag over time totally evolved, and it turned out that Barney Rock was Dean Rock's dad. He's immensely proud of Dean and all that he's achieved. We're just so proud of both of them.
What was it like then in 2023? You probably knew I was going to hang up the boots.
It was sad because it was the last time probably we were going to go as a family, go support you, but the Dublin colours. But listen, the legacy is there for you. And that's the good thing about it, that you did what you wanted to do. You made all our family very proud. You made me very proud. And I think you couldn't really ask for any more than that.
It's your last one now. Just make it a good one.
This has to go into the hole.
I'll give you the last one. This is it. This is the one.